Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, something from the cellar, where this week I've been inspired by the new Wham! Documentary that I can't stop watching on Netflix. It's a glorious deep dive that celebrates 40 years of one of the most successful pop bands ever to come out of the UK, and not just the 80s. So I wanted to revisit two seminal players from that time who have appeared on a previous episode of White Wine Question Time. And George Michael sits at the very heart of who they are and the love story that went on to become their marriage. They're Martin and Shirley Kemp. Shirley was, of course, Shirley as in Pepsi, and Shirley as in Wham. Martin Kemp was the hottest member of Spandau Ballet. And as you're about to hear, they came to be because George Michael helped to engineer their very first date and even attended a something of a green and hairy gooseberry while they, well, got it on a stairwell at Camden Palais. And welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that brings together well-known friends to talk through three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And this week, my guests are more than just friends. They also happen to be man and wife and have been together now for a very impressive almost 40 years.
40 years! Oh, my goodness.
I need a medal.
He was one-fifth of Spandau Ballet, a band who were ruling the charts the world over and a firm fixture on millions of teenage girls' bedroom walls. When she saw him in a magazine, she had a gut feeling that they'd meet. And the chances that they would were stacked firmly in her favour because she was spotted by him providing backing vocals for Wham! On Top of the Pops. As soon as he saw her, he was the smitten kitten. Since then, they've raised two glorious children, Roman and Harley Moon. He went on to become an award-winning actor. She nursed and carried him through two terrifying brain tumours. And now they've decided to start working together with the release of their first album, The Swing of It, which is available to pre-order now. Martin and Shirley Kemp, it is my absolute pleasure to welcome you to the show.
It's funny listening to it because it's like a film. I'm
is
looking
it?
At this.
Oh,
I'm like,
good.
I remember so well sitting in my mum and dad's living room with my back up against the sofa, the arm of the sofa on the floor, watching Top of the Pops and absolutely falling in love with Shirley there and then.
And
through the television screen.
So really, was it that instant, Martin? You took one
look? Absolutely, yeah. And I remember exactly what you were wearing with that white outfit that you had on.
I can tell you what it was because I went down the Sunday market and replicated it.
Did you?
It was a Choose Life t-shirt with a fishtail
skirt.
No,
it wasn't.
No, it was talking about
Melissa Kaplan dress.
Melissa Kaplan with
a
zip.
It had a kind of... No, it had buttons. I'll bring it with me next time. And it had a little kind of high cut.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
It was
like
cream.
A
it was a cream dress and I had a little old brown belt around the middle of it.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I remember that white outfit. I was through my mother's Freeman's catalogue like no one's business trying to emulate it.
Well, that's what it was all about, though. Music and fashion were hand in hand. It was fun.
But she looked beautiful and I remember... being obsessed. And it was only a couple of weeks afterwards that we were at a after-show party for a show called Yakety Yak with the McGann brothers. And
in the West End, wasn't it? West End opening.
Yeah, a West End opening. And I saw Shirley across the other side of the room. And it took me like a good hour to get the courage up to go over there. And when I did, Shirley was really disappointed because I had lots of 80s makeup on.
I had no makeup on because we'd all just been swimming. Me, George and Andrew used to go swimming because our friend David was a lifeguard. So we used to spend all this time and then we were such kids and spontaneous. Oh, let's go to this thing. Okay, we'd never really been to anything. And I wasn't dressed up. David said, Martin Kempsey, I was going, What? I could feel myself sinking, thinking, no, I don't want to meet him. Not tonight, please, not tonight. And of course, David, and I see David and Martin walking towards me. And I'm like, this is it. I've lost the chance now. He's never going to like me. And then at the end of the evening, he slipped his phone number in my hand.
Aww.
I thought, oh my goodness.
I bet you haven't even registered that she didn't have makeup on or that she just got out of the
No, of course I didn't. No, I couldn't even see
any of that. Don't see that stuff.
No. And all I saw was he's got more makeup on than me. He's got
slightly
enough hairspray for the,
Hang on, if we could just wheel it back a bit. You know, the bit that I can't make sense of here is the words David, Austin and lifeguard together.
The two things don't quite match.
Well,
I'm trying to get my head around this.
We still didn't understand it. That's why we used to go and pretend we were drowning. In the end, he banned us from going. He was going, you can't keep coming and going, help, help.
Because David is a friend of yours, Shirley, and was really good friends, remained friends, lifelong friends with George.
Yeah, since they were 4 years old.
Yeah.
They were brothers,
He's a lovely, lovely man.
Kind of integral part of our little group.
But to know him and see him as a lifeguard is to
understand the background. Long before the wand.
You wouldn't trust your life with him, let's put it that way.
Well, that's why we used to go to wind him up.
Just to annoy him.
Yeah, just
but
to pretend we were drowning.
Man. He's a beautiful man. He really is. One of my best friends.
Well, and then your first date came about. You went for a Mexican, am I right, in Covent Garden? But there wasn't just the two of you.
I got a bit mixed up here. I thought we did... Or was it Camden Palace?
No. Let's get this right. We went to Camden Palace. Our first date was arranged to go to Camden Palace. Shirley called me, right? It took about 3 weeks. And Shirley...
Oh, you played it cool.
I was so nervous.
And Shirley will tell you the story about calling me.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, yeah. What, now? Okay, yeah. So George kept saying, are you going to call... He was really excited about... Because George was quite a big Spandau fan at the time. He's going, when are you going to call him? I was going, oh, I can't. Because in those days, you didn't have mobile phones. You called the house phone. And it was always the mum or dad that answered it.
And they read out the number.
Yeah, I read out the number. And we were at George's house and his sister had a phone in her bedroom and he grabbed me by the hand. He goes, right, I've got the number. Come on, I'm going to dial it. I was going, no. You know, and you go, no. I really do want to, but no. And he picked the phone and he dialed it and he handed it to me. My heart was in my throat. And then Martin's mum answered it. And I thought, most sort of gets girls calling him all the time. She's going to say, no, he's not here. I said, hello, is Martin there? Who is it?
She never said that.
But it felt like that because I was so nervous. And then when Martin picked it up, then he went, oh, I'm so pleased you called me. And I just went, and George is looking at his eyes and like head nodding. Yeah.
So
that was it. I'm shaking afterwards.
So we arranged a first date at the Camden Palace. Remember that place?
I love the Camden Palace.
Of course.
What is it now?
Tuesday night.
Coco's now.
Coco's, right?
Yeah. I think it was a Tuesday night.
And so we arranged to meet there. And I remember clearly walking down the pavement towards Camden Palace and on this first date. And as I get towards Shirley, I see her standing on the pavement outside, and Shirley had brought a wingman, which is not what you want, right, on your first date. You know,
you
want
really
to be on
were
your own.
Nervous. Who was your wingman?
George Michael. So George came with us on that day and spent all night standing there.
Like a spare part.
While
yeah,
I was
really
to...
annoyed with me that I was snogging too much.
Yeah, well, I wanted some
like,
space.
Oh, my God, you didn't even come up for air. I just stood there. I felt such an idiot.
you two kind of got it on.
You know, yeah. So...
Why do you think, because, I mean, he's one of your oldest friends, George.
Yeah.
Why do you think he was so gunning for you to go out with Martin? He must have... Did he have good vibes about it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was like my... We were both each other's agony aunts. Mm. So... you know, he just thought, oh, I know, because he knew I used to go on about Martin a lot. So, like anyone, do you know Martin Kent? So I saw a picture of him in a magazine and I used to say to George, I'm going to meet him one day. And then I even told George I'd marry him one day.
Did you?
That's another instinct, that feeling like,
yeah.
And he just laughed. I went, I think I'm going to marry him one day. And I did feel that. I'm not just saying that.
Yeah.
It was an inner feeling that I think I'm going to marry him. And he just laughed.
So, did he?
There you go.
Yeah. Then he stopped laughing at all my instincts once I married him. Like, well, maybe she's right.
She's like a witch.
Yeah.
And now, after all these years and two beautiful children, mm. Roman and Harley, you two have decided to work together.
Yeah, how strange after all this time.
So there's a new album coming out. It's available for pre-order now.
It's called In the Swing of It.
Yeah.
And it is a big band swing of standard songs.
Love
you know, it's
it.
Like Fly Me to the Moon and, you know...
The Way You Look Tonight.
That kick in the head, Way You Look Tonight. All of those stuff. And what we found, you know, was that, you know, love songs nowadays, when you listen to them, they're quite down. It's about people leaving you, right? And in the 50s, love songs were about being happy. And so we tried to make this album that was really happy.
But it was a purer time. I mean, nobody wrote songs about... anything other than feelings.
Yeah,
you know,
the act
of love was never lyrically explained, was it?
Exactly. It's really cute. And so what we did, what was amazing about this whole opportunity, well, I still call it an opportunity because it kind of came to us. It was just like, well, what songs do you want to sing? So it's like, what, we're just going to choose songs and we can just, and there was no pressure on us. So we really kind of went and listened to songs that we felt represented us, especially because I get asked, like, oh, what's the secret to your relationship?
Yeah.
What's this? And I really feel when I listen to this album, I'm almost looking at my relationship as an outsider.
Aww.
So it kind of, all because of the songs we've chosen, you can kind of tell our relationship in the album.
From the song choices.
Yeah.
Yes.
Was this originally intended to be a duo? You're back in another duo, Shirley.
Yeah, it's
well,
my
it was
third
kind of, it was kind of floating, you know. People had come to me like a couple of years ago and said, do you want to make an album? And so in the end, I went in and recorded a few songs. And I went home and I said to Shirley, you know what, Shirley, I'd love to do a song where the two of us are together, you know. And we went and recorded You Make Me Feel So Young. Didn't we? And we put that down and we took the bunch of songs to Sony. Sony just flipped over Shirley's voice because Shirley has got this voice that sounds like Doris Day. And it's absolutely made for those kind of 50s standards. And it's beautiful. And so they flipped over that and they said, this is what we want to do. And I said, why not? I'm up for that.
I didn't even feel ready for it. I was like, what, me? Me? Are you sure they want me?
I went home.
Is that because it's been a while?
Yes, but I don't sing. It's something I did when I was younger. I haven't been in a recording studio for 30 years. So it wasn't... And I'm not very good at the celebrity thing. I'm not looking for that. I'm quite private and quite...
You like the shade.
Yeah, I kind of like... I like. Yeah, I'll stand in the light, but I don't need to be in the light, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I had to think about all that. Like, oh, wow, that means putting yourself out there again. And that was something that I kind of was quite reluctant for a while. And the producer was lovely. He was going, you've got to get back out there. You know, you should be doing this. And then once we recorded You Make Me Feel So Young, I got the bug.
You did.
I was like, right, let's go back. Let's go and do all the other songs. And so it's lovely.
Yeah.
Well, that brings me to my very first question for you, because I was looking through the track listing. The only two original songs on there were actually written for you by your daughter, Harley.
Yeah.
Which I think is wonderful. And it's wonderful to hear how she writes you.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah. Her take on us.
Yeah.
I co-wrote one of them.
Did you?
The second one.
Yeah, because I used to write songs, so I haven't done that in 30 years. So me and Harley co-wrote When We're Apart. But she knows, I mean, the songs to the song that she wrote, Like We Used to Do, when I heard it, I just smiled so much because I could see it from her perspective of her mum and dad dancing around the house and us singing. So it's, once again, it represents us. It really does.
Oh, man. So, when I heard that song, first time I heard it and she demoed it, I was in tears. Because, it was just her version of us, how she saw us. You know, so it was a lovely moment, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So what I wanted to know from you two is, which is the song that says love to you? That song that takes you back to the early 80s when you two have locked hearts and you're falling in love.
So we're Berkeley Square.
Yeah, Berkeley Square is a big one. Yeah.
Because London, that was our playground when we were younger. You know, we were all over London when we were younger, going out everywhere, finding, you know, little bars, clubs. So that represents my youth. When I think about my time as a youngster, it was London. So Berkeley Square.
A Nightingale sang in Berkeley Square.
Yeah, which is...
Which I was doing Chicago last year in the West End and playing Billy Flynn. And there was a warm-up song there. You know, you do the vocal warm-up before the show, you know, in the afternoon. And the keyboard player there, the MD, started to play A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square, and I had never heard it before. But so I checked it out in my dressing room straight afterwards, and the words to it were just, I felt at the time, this is like a year and a half ago now, the words to it just represented me and Shirley. This is before we even thought about making an album and recording this track. But the words to it were just us going out, you know, in town, in around Soho on our first dates. And so I had that in my head all the time, that was our song. And so when it came to recording the album, that was one of the songs that I put
forward.
Yeah,
I'd actually not heard that song.
Had you not?
No.
Yeah. And when you heard it, did it make sense?
Yeah, I could see the chart. Like, it's a visual thing for me. So, yeah, I was thinking, yeah, I can feel this. And that was the other thing. We even kind of sang a few songs that just didn't work because the intention wasn't. And we thought, you know what, this isn't working because it's not resonating with us.
Yeah, you've got to
so
feel it.
That's why I feel so, I'm so happy about the album because there's so much purity, authenticity in it. It's real. It's not like manufactured from someone else. It's absolutely me and Martin choosing every song and making sure it fitted us.
But The Way You Look Tonight is my favourite on the album.
Oh, such a beautiful song.
It's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
It's just, I feel like when you hear that song on the record, it's kind of like letting people listen to our relationship, which I'm really pleased at.
Oh, and it's a very romantic song.
Yeah, really, yeah.
And I've probably been running into you for 20 years now, Martin, and every time you speak of Shirley, and this was before I'd even met you, Shirley.
Of course.
The love and respect that he has for you pours out of every sentence.
I know, it's incredible. I can't believe it myself.
But you are you are Mr. Romance.
Aww.
And it's lovely to see it here. So, and what about if I go back to, was it 81 you met?
81, 81 and a half, something like that. Yeah.
Is there a song from that time that makes you go, oh yeah, that's when we met?
Yes.
Yeah, go on.
So on another date Martin took me to, and I didn't take George on this date, he took me to Ronnie Scott's. He said, oh, do you want to come to Ronnie Scott's? My friend's playing. And it was Sade. And I remember her singing Your Love is King. I remember looking over at Martin as she's singing it, and I kind of got that feeling like, oh, what a gorgeous song. So that song, even now, it still feels as fresh when I play it now. I always feel that's my song. That's my song. I'm not sharing that song.
But
that's
isn't
my
that
song.
The beauty and power of music? Is
it's amazing.
It's such a cellular memory
thing. Because there's millions of people out there with that same feeling, saying, that's my song. That's my song. And it's amazing what it does.
Sade at Ronnie Scott's. You really know how to woo a girl.
Yeah. No one really heard of her then. I remember telling people.
That was the last date we had, wasn't it?
And then we had kids. And it all went wrong.
No, we went on tour, I think. And then...
You know, Sade turned 60 this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and she's going to put another album out, I hear. Which is literally
lovely.
Music to my ears.
Yeah,
Hasn't she done it right, though, you know?
Oh, she's stayed out that life. Graceful woman, not greedy for the limelight, just about the music. And I love that, and that's kind of how I'd love to do it, but not as easy as it looks.
It's not as easy as it looks. But that is why you're doing it. You're back doing it because you want to do it.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, this whole album isn't something that, you know, some idea that we've had to go out there and make money or do or, you know, get back on the road. This is because we wanted to do it.
Yeah.
This is for each other. And so it's also, you know, something to leave behind as well, which is nice.
And imagine your grandchildren.
Yeah, saying that's my grandparents on there.
I mean, I can imagine Harley got very misty-eyed at all of this. What about Roman?
Ro took the mickey.
He's actually complimentary because Harley told me, she said, me and Roman had a conversation. What if we don't like it? Because they're very honest. We're all very honest with each other. She goes, how are we going to deal with this? And then I remember Roman coming back going, oh my, like, well, God, it sounds incredible. So I knew, and then Harley said she cried when she heard a song. So I knew, if I can capture those two, it's going to be good.
You've got to remember, my house is like Media City, right? It's got, you know, Roman goes off to do his radio show in the morning. Harley goes off to run a media company. Me and Shirley, honestly, we walk in, we have a whiteboard in our kitchen saying who's doing what. You know, it's like a big office.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. We're a good production company because I do photography as well. So if Martin needs a headshot, I'm like straight away, yeah, what do you need?
Your pictures of Martin are beautiful.
Yeah.
Your photography, check out Shirley's Instagram.
Thank you.
She has the most exquisite eye.
They are beautiful, yeah.
And I love your love of flowers. I share it.
I'm addicted.
And the way you stage your...
I'm worried I'm boring people.
No, keep them coming.
Thank you.
Honestly, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. I only have to close my eyes to imagine what your house will look like based on the pictures that you put up. So just think,
we are all one-stop media shop.
Martin's not looking on the interiors. Are you ready for your next question?
Yeah.
Okay. Question number two. If you could go back and live again one period of your life together, what period of your relationship would that be, and why was it so significant?
Mine would be to the point where you have kids, because that's the part where you stop being a kid, I think, and you become an adult. And that is, for me, is the most interesting part of my life. Because I changed I grew up at that point.
You're no longer number one, right?
No longer number one. There's somebody,
you don't want to be.
There's people in your life that are far more important than you. People in your life you would give your life up for. And in an instant. And that is the biggest change in your life. And I think when I look back at my life, that is those 3 years that we had where we had Roman and then Harley... Harley and then Roman. Harley and then Roman were the most important 3 years of my life.
And that was really a massive ambition fulfilled for you as well, because I remember looking back over magazine interviews and people were interviewing you saying, so what do you want next, America? And you were like, no. I want to be a mum.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, Shirley was obsessed.
I was never really ambitious.
Obsessed.
Honestly, all I can say is, in my life, I've never been ambitious. I've never auditioned for anything in my life. I've never gone to a job interview. Things have just come to me, which is lovely. And all I really wanted was a lovely home with a nice husband and some children. So even I remember being in the depths of Pepsi and Shirley and doing a second album, and I'm thinking, I've got to get out of this. I don't want to keep touring the world. I want to have flowers at home and candles and create a beautiful home. That was always my biggest, still is, it's the most important thing to me, is that my home is my sanctuary, and that when you come into my home, you know, it's like, oh, I love it here. That
it envelops you.
Yeah, yeah. So... forgotten what the question was.
It was about your ambition to become parents. So for Martin, that's his most...
So obviously, you know that my ambition, because I was diagnosed with endometriosis when I was very young, and it was I was told that I may not be able to have children. So I think that also sparked something.
Yeah.
Once you're told you can't do something, you're like, I'm, you know...
I must.
So that was a worry for me. But luckily, I did have children. But for me, you know, look, when you look back, and as soon as I pick up pictures of the kids when they were tiny, especially when they're around kind of 8 and 4, that age, where, oh, I miss that so much. It makes my heart break. I'm in tears when I look at those photos.
It does. It makes you ache for them, doesn't it?
Ache. And also, our parents were alive then, and you just realise there was so much around us. And now, you know, we both lost our parents. Kids have left home. and you suddenly like, oh, so luckily this album has filled that huge void that was there.
Because you know, don't you? I mean, the thing is, you're so busy in that moment, raising children, busy lives, busy careers.
Yeah, you don't appreciate it enough.
You don't smell the roses.
So you see, that's the big thing that I try and pass on to Harley and Roman, and it always has been, is to stand back and breathe in the good times. Stand back and make sure you recognise it, because all of us are in too much of a rush to get to the next point. It's kind of like, I remember being a kid and my ambition, you know, when we started out in music, and my ambition was to play the marquee, right? But when you get to the marquee, by the time you've got there, your ambition has already moved on to Hampstead Odeon. And then your ambition's moved on to Wembley. But then your ambition's moved on to Wembley Stadium, and you can never quite fulfil it. So you never get that moment where you stand back and say, I've done it. Because you're always on to the next thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's been my big thing with Harley and Roman, is to show them that you have to take that breath and breathe it in.
Yeah, savour it.
Yeah, I always remember I read that Deepak Chopra book years ago, and it said success is not a destination. And I think that may be one of the best kind of piece of things that I've ever read, because it just made so much sense to me. It's kind of like when you've climbed a mountain and you've got there in the top and you're on your own and you look around, well, no one else is here.
Yeah, well,
you've got to go back down again.
Yeah.
So it's kind of such a symbolic thing for me to think, yeah, success is not a destination.
No, it's about happiness, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the journey. It's what you're doing every day. Are you happy every day, or do you think you'll only be happy if you reach that point?
Yeah.
Then that's not going to work.
Well, I call them fast food goals, because they never fill you up for long.
Yeah, that's right.
Then you go, oh.
That's right.
That's a bit empty. I mean, like last week I sent my son, started secondary school, and that's a rite of passage, and I'm sure you can remember that with your kids.
Yeah.
So, you know, and literally as we walk into the new school, I went to hold his hand and he went, no,
no.
He said, and he looked at me and he went, don't, because I might get bullied.
Oh.
And I said, okay. And I'm saying out of the corner of my mouth, but I love you. And he's like, I love you too. And I thought, this is it. It's a gear change. And I literally sobbed all the way.
Yeah, like, you do.
Because
you
do. And now he's on to the next stage, the next phase. And if I could just rewind and have...
I know.
And if I could just change his nappy.
Yeah.
Or just rock him off for an afternoon sleep.
Yeah.
In my arms again.
See, that goes back to the question that you asked me.
Yeah,
what's the most important point in your life? It's that.
Yeah.
And I don't think... nothing will beat that. Nothing.
I remember actually when I was doing X Factor, Sharon Osbourne always used to say that we used to spend hours sitting in makeup, having our faces rebuilt. Yeah. And she always would say, if I could just have 24 hours with my kids as babies.
Yeah.
Oh, and I said, what would you do? Yeah. She's like, I'd jump in the swimming pool with them, I'd change their nappies, I'd hold their hands, I'd kiss them all over. And you just, at the time, I didn't have kids, I didn't get
it. You can't understand it, can you? No.
But when you say you look at those pictures, Shirley, and
I'm
you
sobbing.
Ache.
If I go down some days and Martin went, you've been looking at pictures. I look at a wreck.
Yeah.
I can't breathe. Oh, I'm just looking at photos.
But Harley was born in Hendon in London, wasn't she? Yeah. In a natural birthing clinic, right? Yeah. And I remember driving home from there, and there was this massive harvest moon up in the sky, you know, and so we ended up calling her Harley Moon for that reason. And then Roman was born in Los Angeles, because I was working on a film over there. And at the time, Shirley was 9 months pregnant. And I said to Shirley, I've got to be at the birth. The only thing we can do is for you to come to America. 9 months pregnant, right?
But you were thrilled, Shirley.
Now, this is completely not allowed, right?
No, you can't fly.
Shirley was the size of a house, right? Absolutely. And I remember getting to Los Angeles, into customs, and Shirley sweating, right? So we get all the coats and the bags and everything, and we put it on top of Shirley's big old belly, trying to hide the fact that she's pregnant. I mean, you're not allowed to go in after your 4 months or five months pregnant.
28 weeks.
Something like that, yeah. And so we put all the coats and the bags on top of Shirley. Shirley gets up to the customs and starts having contractions.
No!
Yeah, it is.
Wearing all the coats.
Yeah.
Oh,
she starts having contractions going up towards the customs. And I'm thinking, no. And just as the contraction stops, we walk through and the guy stamps her passport. And we get to the other side, contraction comes back again. I go, oh my goodness, that was the luckiest thing that ever happened.
So where did you go, straight to the hospital?
So we went to Cedars-Sinai. Yeah.
So I'd kind of found ahead of time a doctor, obstetrician and all that. But so, it was quite an experience having a baby when you've got no family or friends there. And
500 coats on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking like Joey Tribbiani in an episode of Friends.
It was exactly a scene out of
all the clothes.
It gave Roman an American passport at the end of the day, which I didn't kind of intend for that, but it was just...
Well, you know, post-Brexit, he might be pleased with that.
Yeah.
You never know. You might have done him a favour.
You never know. You might hold it against me as well.
Interesting, though, isn't it, that you've both identified similar moments in your married life that are nothing to do with you two. It's all about your parenting.
Always.
Yeah.
Kids
come first. I think that's because we're really similar. Martin was such a great father, as I felt like I was a full, you know, 100% mother. Martin was the 100% father as well. There was never kind of, we were putting everything into it. It's not like I ever thought he's not doing his thing or so.
No, I loved it. Yeah. Absolutely, I loved it. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Grandchildren next, though. That's the bit I get excited about.
I
just don't know if I'd be so worried about them. I think I'm annoying my kids. Have they strapped in? Have you got home? Have you done this? My brain won't switch off.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
My last question. In the 40 years that you two have been together, the way we live, the way we communicate, the way we eat, exercise, everything has changed irrevocably in some ways. If you could reinstate anything from the last 40 years into our day-to-day living to make it better, what would it be?
That you can just go to a Woolworths or Art Price and buy music directly from a shop instead of having to work out how to download and buy. So... yeah, it's very simple with those days. But I mean, there's not much I do miss, I've got to say. But I just know that one, I actually lost contact with music when it all went to Wi-Fi because I couldn't work out, wasn't connected to things. And I thought, are you telling me if the Wi-Fi goes down, I can't hear music?
Yeah.
That really annoys me. I hate having to be reliant on the Wi-Fi.
And actually, you're right. There is something wonderful, that rite of passage of saving up, going into town on a Saturday, buying that single and not being able to play it till you got home.
Yeah, but I used to read everything.
All the liner notes.
The album, all the thank yous, what are the lyrics, pull it out, what's the imagery. You know, the 70s was a huge... I had older brothers and sisters and my dad's record collection. Everyone in my house loved music. So there were album covers and artwork and I just used to have them all around me and just... I didn't read books. I read, record sleeves and album sleeves.
But, you know...
Over and over again. Learn them like lyrics.
Love them.
We were very lucky, you know, because we were involved in the last great eras of pop culture. Mm. You know, I think nowadays what is pop culture sits behind a laptop and a telephone for a lot of kids.
Well, for a lot of artists as well, they're a brand.
Yeah.
Not just an artist. It's just different times, isn't it?
Yeah, it's different.
But my daughter said something interesting, because I was in that... Obviously, we were in that punk era. And that was such an exciting time to just make up whatever you're going to wear. And that represented, someone would say, oh, you must like that music because that's what you're wearing.
It's quite tribal.
And she, yeah. And she says, I would love that. She goes, all my friends just look scruffy. She goes, no one, you can't tell anyone. She goes, I love the fact that you were dressed to the music you liked.
Yeah.
You know, if you like the Bay City Rollers, you've got your tartan outfit on and all things like that. So, yeah, we come from that era where your kind of clothes represented your music.
It was like a musical uniform, but, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it was just
and
fun,
the only ones left now really are goths.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But then, you know, it's the same thing. You hold that as that's your flag, isn't it? And you walk around, you're holding your flag up and you're saying, this is who I like, this is who I am. But that doesn't really exist at the moment, you know.
And you're right, actually, as a teenage girl growing up, that became a massive part of my identity.
Yeah.
You know, I would go out. I mean, I literally emulated everything you wore on Top of the Pops. I even had Day Glow Finkless gloves that were so flammable. Everything was on the cheese.
So flammable.
I used to go down the Sunday market and they're like, oh, look, they've got knockoff fishtail skirts from Pepsi and Shirley. Yeah. I'll have all of them, please.
Oh, brilliant.
Lots of plastic beads. But that was my identity.
Yeah. And it was fun and it's kind of experimental and it's, you know, just kind of showing a part of your identity, whereas now kids just, it seems so insular. I've got a 12-year-old niece and she will come to my house, but she will spend so much time on her phone.
Well, everything they do is on their phone.
And then she'll look in the mirror and then she'll look on the phone. You think she's getting herself ready now to get a photo, and then she's got a little selfie happens. So yeah, I think that's quite sad, that how the phones have taken away that kind of interaction with people.
So you were talking as well about when you phoned Martin to set up your first date.
Yeah.
The fact that
On
the landline, right? And his mum was going to answer. And you had to get through the layer of the parents before you got him to the phone.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you'd make an arrangement and you'd have to stick by it. There was no like texting, I'm running late.
How did we know? How did we find each other?
How did we know
that we were going out to that club? I think maybe because you just knew your club was on, say, the Wag Club on a Thursday night. We just knew we'd be there.
Yeah.
So,
well, you knew what club represented
Harvey
you.
Harvey always asked me that. How did you know where to meet everyone? I was going, I think there was just a few places you went to on a certain night and that was it.
That was it?
That was the predictability.
And everybody just turned up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, I remember my first relationship, proper relationship. I was told by my parents, because he lived in London and we lived in the country, you can't keep ringing him, the bills are too much. Yes. So we wrote letters to each other in the week before we saw each other on a weekend.
I love that. Well, I still got all the postcards that Martin said, because obviously when we went on tour, the only way to communicate was a postcard. So he used to send it to my mum and dad's house, and I'd send it to his mum and dad's house.
It was too expensive.
The whole family read it. I've got your postcard.
But you couldn't afford to do it any other way. When I went on tour with Spandau Ballet in the early days, I mean, to use a phone from a hotel room would cost you an arm and a leg. You know, so the only way that you could communicate was for postcards. And I used to be home a lot of the time before they even got there.
You know? But hold on, I remember the first international phone call we'd ever had in our house. Because the operator would ring.
Yeah.
Would you take a call from Italy? And my dad went, I guess just thought, he's acting odd. He's going, hello. Oh, una memento? And I was thinking, well, he's never been abroad. Why is he called saying una memento? And then it was Martin calling me from Italy. And my whole family stood round the phone watching me because Martin's calling as if they're in Italy with him. Like, hello, be quick. Like, they're going, hurry up.
And now, when I'm away now, you know, it's the big thing. A lot of people do it, you know, is I call on FaceTime. Shirley puts FaceTime at the dinner table. And we have dinner together.
Yeah. That's amazing. When you were in Australia, I remember you went there and we were just, I didn't feel he had gone that far because he was just doing in the kitchen.
But there is also equally the thrill of that aching, longing, waiting to see each other again, not being able to access each other so readily. So it heightens the romance,
doesn't it?
That
was us.
Be honest, there's good and there's bad
about it.
You know?
You know, in an age of parenting, I want FaceTime. I want to be able to track that child.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I follow my kids on social media, so I know exactly what they're doing, where they're
doing. For me and Shirley, it made us stronger. You know, for a lot of people, it tears them apart.
Yeah.
So there's good and bad.
I love that. The whole idea of your family all staring at the phone.
Yeah. We've got Italy on the last
Italy. That's like the Eurovision.
That's my daughter.
See, if I'd have known, I would have whispered.
What's he saying? It's my dad. Uno momento.
It's Spanish. It's Italian.
It was like a scene out of Only Fools and Horses.
And Martin, what would you reinstate from the last 40 years to enhance your day-to-day lives and the lives of others?
What do you miss? I suppose you miss the innocence, you know, and the naivety of life and finding out about life together and the beginning of that journey. You know, I'd love to go back to those days, I suppose, and feel that again. Mm. Because with experience, you lose that, you know, and you can't help it. You know, I'm not talking about losing excitement of being with each other. I'm talking about just the naivety of life and finding out about things, you know, and discovering the world together. Because Shirley and I have been together since we were kids, really. How old are we? Like 20? 20 yeah. years old. Mm. And so there was a naivety about it. And you miss that. And I think everybody does. Mm. You know, I think that's what I would reinstate. But it's not possible. You can't, you know, you can't turn back the clock as much as I'd like to.
I'll just get the old photos out.
Shelley'll be in tears.
Yeah, Shelley'll be crying.
But you're equally as nostalgic because you post pictures of the kids as babies on Instagram. And, of course. And your love as a father, it just oozes out of your feed. It's lovely.
Of course, you know, I mean, they were, like I said, they were obviously my favourite days ever. You know, forget Live Aid and forget all those things that you achieve in your life, in your career. My favourite memories are the kids growing up and them as babies and them as children. And but I love that idea when I look back that I was discovering the world and I was discovering losing my naivety and discovering each other. And you're in a lot of ways, I suppose, discovering your own personality. And once you reach, I've always thought once you reach 27, you stay at 27 in your mind.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I think you've discovered everything about yourself by 27.
Well, I don't know about that, but mentally, I haven't moved on.
That's me. I'm stuck at 27 in my head, you know. My body's 57, but my actual mental age is 27.
But I'm saying that, Martin, your head has been through an awful lot more than most.
Yeah,
it has. Two brain tumours.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it got opened up a few times.
Jeez, yeah. I mean, again, that's where your instincts kicked in, Shirley. When I was reading some old interviews with you, and you were just refusing to accept when you had your second tumour, and they were saying, "God,
it was a tough time.
We're going to have to operate." She was like, "Hang on a minute! You found some world-beating doctor with one machine down the road from you."
Well, what was incredible was even before Martin was diagnosed with a brain tumour, I kept touching his head and said, "I'm not. I just think there's something about your head that's there's something like they had this little bump, and he went to the doctor. They said, "I think it's a calcium growth." And then I said, I think it's getting a bit bigger. And I kept insisting, you need to go back to the doctor. And men are very bad at going to the doctor, what Martin is. You'll get there and go, I feel fine. Then come back to me going, I don't feel well. All right, get back to the doctor. I am not the doctor.
But I was doing a show called The Outer Limits in Canada. And I was playing this old professor that discovered a formula for everlasting life. And it all goes wrong because it was The Outer Limits, obviously. And they were pulling on a bald cap to make me look like 200 years old, you know. And as they pulled it on, this lump on my head just was so pronounced. It looked like Ayers rock or something sticking out the top. And the calcium had just like doubled in a matter of weeks, you know, and it was huge. And so they sent me home from there straight away. And within hours, basically, they had me on the operating table for 8 hours, cutting the whole thing away. But when they cut the first one away, they found a second one that was sitting right inside at the top of my spine that was hiding. And that would have been the one that would have killed me if it wasn't for the first one. So, but I look at it as if it was the luckiest thing that has ever happened to me in my life, because it could quite easily spin of a coin, it could have been cancer.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was a benign tumour that was cut out. So,
But on the second one, they were going to have to operate on you again. You'd already had to learn to walk again. And you'd temporarily lost fear. I mean, you'd been through hell.
That was the worst thing because we didn't tell anyone about the second one. So obviously Martin had gone through so much having, you know, his skull taken away and, you know, just the bruising from that first operation took months for him to recover. And all I kept thinking was, oh, no, people were going to me, you must be so relieved now. And I'm thinking, you don't know, he's got a second one. So we didn't want to tell anyone that. And we didn't want, you know, it's just so... Well, sometimes when things are so frightening, you can't even talk about it because you don't even want to put it out there for it to be true.
Well, you don't want to accept it yourself.
That's right,
half of it.
So,
but you never gave up on it, Shirley, because
I was furious, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
I was furious with something. I thought, what's gone on? Why has Martin got this? He's such a, and I realised, okay, so it doesn't matter if he's been a good person or we've, you know. So then I spent the whole of the 90s going on this huge spiritual healing journey, trying to find, because I sat there and I said to the professor, why has he got the brain tumor? He just looked at me and said, we don't know. And that made me really angry. I was really had a lot of anger. And I thought, you're a professor and you do not know why he's got this. So then I just went on this whole mission, got healers around the house. And Martin was kind of like, okay, yeah, if you want. But
so
I just thought there had
it.
To be
yeah,
more of a reason. Of there can't just be, I don't know,
but
they just like Martin's
But I will
brain.
Say, you know, after the first one was cut out, the couple of years after that, when it was time to approach the second one that was hiding itself and growing at this super vast rate, you know, that I had to have taken out, Shirley and George phoned around the whole of the world.
Well, we just said looking to the,
for,
yeah, I just
looking
said
for
to
someone
the professor.
To sort it
Let's
out.
Go
so
to
you and George hit the phones.
I said to George, I said, I obviously said to him, what he said, they doesn't know why. Doesn't and I said, I just can't accept this. And he says, I know. Okay, well, the best place is to go to America. So I've called back the professor. I'm going, right, we need to look into America. And then within a week or so, he said, actually, I found a Professor Black in America. And he suggests that this is what we're going to try. So we were all ready to sell our house, everything, whatever we had to do to go over to America and have treatment. I didn't care. And then he said, but the good thing is we can do this at Barts Hospital, which was just when we lived in London around the corner from us. I'm thinking, why? Oh, how did this, you know? So it is that sometimes.
But if you hadn't demanded answers,
sometimes
you
have to push,
that.
Yeah, because yeah. I was angry. I was really angry that. I don't believe this is nothing you can do about this.
But when I look back, so, I was such a man because when the doctor was saying we can't do anything about this one in the middle, this second one, he says, you know, we're going to have to cut through the middle of the brain, open it up. You're going to lose the use of your legs. You might lose your eyes and so on and so on. It was a disaster. It was a car crash. And he's saying, but we're going to have to get it out to save your life, so we're going to have to accept the terms. And Shirley's going, nope, we're not doing that. We're going to find someone else. I'm going, Shell, shush, shush, shush. It's the doctor, shush.
She's texting George going, keep calling America.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm going, Shirley, shush. He knows what he's talking about. I'll just go and get it done. And yeah. Shirley stopped him from doing that and took it on herself and her and George found someone.
And I do advise anyone with a lot of kind of illnesses, look into it. Don't accept what someone's telling you.
Because actually, what you ended up having by way of treatment was almost like a chemotherapy. So there was
radiation.
Yeah.
So there was no surgery. They didn't have
surgery.
No, didn't have to open you up again.
Yeah, stereotactic radiation I had, which was like two lasers coming together at one point in your brain that kind of burns that section out.
But you have to stay so still while it's happening. Is that right?
Oh yeah.
They
locked you into the
lock you into the machine. And it was
you
quite
must
funny.
Have been absolutely terrified.
Well, what happens is a couple of weeks before that, they take you into hospital and they, in those days, I know it's different now because I've worked on a few of those machines now and I opened a few up in different hospitals. And in those days, they used to build this Perspex box that's fitted around your head. Right?
Put like something
and,
out
and they
of
said, so the first one, like Shirley said, you know, I admitted and I said to everybody, okay, I've got this brain tumour, I've got to sort out. Second one, we was trying to keep quiet. So when it came around to doing the second one, they took me into Barts and they built this Perspex box around my head so they could lock it into the machine and get the laser to hit my brain in the right, absolutely the right position. And it came to the day of the surgery itself when they're going to stick the lasers in. And they take me into Barts and they put the Perspex box on. And then they started to put me into a wheelchair and they're wheeling me out of Barts. And I'm thinking, I'm trying to keep this quiet. Hang on a second. And before I know it, they're wheeling me down the street with this in a wheelchair with this Perspex box around my head. And there's all people across the road going, it's Martin Kemp. Martin.
Imagine if they had phone videos then.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Boomerang.
You'd have gone viral.
But anyway, they locked me into the machine and they zapped me for 20 minutes. And within 6 months, it was dying. The tumour was dying.
It's a slow process.
And it disappeared, yeah.
Without the risk of that surgery, you also didn't run the risk of losing your legs,
exactly.
Your sight.
It's so much safer.
Your tenacity and your anger,
yeah.
Shirley,
yeah.
was life-giving.
Because it wasn't that process that they used on me wasn't something they would they had ever tried before on benign tumours. They'd tried it on cancerous tumours, but not on benign, not on the type of tumour that I had. So it was
But communication is a key for so many things in life. If you just miss a little bit of information, it can change the whole course of your life.
So I took you out to dinner, didn't I, Charles, for doing that?
It is remarkable. And saying about your relationship again, that gave my relationship with Martin a whole other meaning for my gratitude. Just to think my husband's still alive. You know, that was.
Doesn't matter if he's annoying, he's alive.
So then I just was kind of so much easier on everything.
But you know, when you go through times like that, I think they either tear you apart or they bring you together. And for us, Shirley and I, we were lucky it brought us together.
And it's probably skewed your view on life massively without you, you know.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know, when we talk about those moments you'd like to go back and revisit again, it's all about those little moments. It's not Live Aid.
No.
It's your kids.
Because the only thing that's real in life is love. Because once you've if you ever lost people in your life, you still hold that love for them. No matter, you can have someone's watch. Like, I'm not materialistic. I wouldn't be looking for something that someone owned. Their love that I've had for people that I've lost is so deep in me. That makes me who I am. So I really know that love is the only thing that's real, and that is my absolutely foundation.
Mm. That's your currency.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And I think it's the one that we should all measure everything by, really.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's so nice to have you two in. And the album's out on the 22nd of November, but you can pre-order it now, can't you, on iTunes and all of the other places that you now download your music.
Yeah,
and
however you do that.
Might even be able to find some physical copies in old school record shops.
I think supermarkets sell
them. I made them do vinyl.
Apparently the supermarket, the record company, I said, when will I get a CD?
I made them do vinyl as well, because we all love vinyl, right?
Especially with swing, because if you hear that needle on the record and that little crackle.
It has to be. So we made them do vinyl.
Really pleased at the vinyl.
Oh, best of luck. I really hope hope it's not the last time that we hear you on
record. No, I hope it's not. I've got the bug now.
Oh, I love it.
When am I getting back? When am I getting back in that studio? it's amazing.
That was lovely talking to you.
Thank you both.
Thank you for the wine.
No, you're very welcome.
Cheers.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with The Second Tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search Second Tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.